I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Welcome back to the Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast presented by Zwift. There's been a lot of news and talk about Zwift in the last few days. 155Ks this stage 8, one of the hardest stages of this year's Vuelta, finishing on the Fanquea climb, I think for the first time ever. We're in a pretty remote Asturias region. Like, they don't go through Oviedo, an actual big town. Really remote roads, not many fans on the road. But it's a really attractive region. And so it's a hard medium mountain stage before the final climb. It kicks off with 7K 6.3% out of neutral. That means it will be easier in theory for climbers to get in the break. There's then a 7K 6% climb, 6K is 5%, 6K is 5.5%, 4K is 8% before the Fanquea climb, 10.2K is 8%. The official graphics were saying it was 10K is 9%. I don't know about that. I'm not sure it was, but there were some steep sections. The last 2Ks were 9%, and there was even a little descent almost in there. Very narrow, tricky climb, yeah. Unknown by people, and so you never really know what you're going to get. But out the gate, Benji, kind of doing a Wout van Aert, Jay Vine. Well, no, before then, Ineos, they actually did try to do the Catalonia thing we said.
Exactly. We had a group that started creating at the front of the peloton, and we know that a stage that starts with an uphill section obviously is more difficult to control for the peloton, so lots of people, it becomes like chaos, like on the road. You see multiple riders getting a gap, and then some riders try to bridge it and so forth, but seven riders got a clear for a bit. Lutsenko, Vilela, Podun, McNulty, Stannard, Vine, and Gisbert. Stannard, a teammate for Vine in that specific situation, so it's looking good for both of picks of yesterday. Mine was Spodden, yours was Vine at this point in the race. Now, other people started joining, Pinot, Tarame, Cabedo, and at a certain point, there was a small group that followed, and at first it looked like he was just at the front, positioning himself, Carapaz, in third position of the peloton, but it looked like a gap opened up, and that's it with these situations. Eight chaos at the front of the peloton, and you don't know what is an attack because something can be a bit of a faster tempo. And if one person behind that loses the wheel, then it's certainly a group that goes ahead for a bit. So that started happening with Carapaz and a group of like four or five riders. I think Rohan Dennis was involved and so forth. But very quickly, the group behind, which was not far behind, had Quickstep at the front. Multiple riders, I think two or three riders at the front of that peloton group, the Remco group is what I would call it. And they were gradually bringing back the group of Carapaz, and it didn't take that long. Let's be honest about it. The gap was very quickly closed. But there's also this factor of, like, Carapaz didn't throw himself for that attack. He didn't, like, try and make that group stick. And perhaps it is because Quickstep reacted so swiftly that they decided that. Or perhaps, something we would see later, he later pulled his radio off. Perhaps Ineos called him back. Do you think the conspiracy theory is alive?
I don't think he has the legs. I just don't think he has it. Like, I think he almost did a good thing today where when he was still close enough on GC, he's allowed himself to be used as bait to put Quickstep under pressure. And we thought, like, this would be hard for Quickstep to control, but it would need multiple teams to team up with Ineos, like a Bora, a UAE, and maybe a Jumbo-Visma. They probably can't just do it on their own. Ineos, particularly when Gegenhardt, Sivakov, and Rodriguez are still all riding for their own GC. So anyway, Vine goes clear himself. He's like 8 minutes back on GC. He's got Soler in sort of close, but he almost drops him a bit on the descent. And so he is going to do what sort of Wout and Van der Poel did on the Granon stage. They'll stay in front, pushing further enough ahead for the rest of the break to then start to reform in this valley, which there's loads of attacks, and Quickstep were having to manage that still, Benji. But it was I think they did a good job because Lander went, I can't remember who else was in there initially, but Lander going at 5 minutes, I think he's okay to let go in that break. You don't need to overreact. Yeah.
Exactly. I think 6:33 was the actual like time he was behind in GC, but that's the same, you know. Hey, it's still a notable gap. Lutsenko also in that group. Mess Pedersen, that's intriguing because he's close to the green jersey, and there was a green jersey sprint like 5 climbs into today's race. So it would have been difficult to get that green jersey sprint, but we've seen his climbing this week has been on point, so there was some hope there. Admirai in there for FDJ. Then we have Lucas Hamilton. Reintarami again, who was also in the initial break that didn't stick. Soler, who was with Vine himself. And like you said, Mikel Landa. That was the breakaway that we had up the road right now. But FDJ wasn't happy. FDJ was like, Admirai, that's the man we couldn't send to the Tour de France because he couldn't pace on the flat. Let us get Pinot and Reichenbach in that breakaway as well. Reichenbach, he can pace Pinot on the flat to that breakaway. We believe in it. And we get a chase by Groupama with those two riders. And Quickstep obviously is fine with that. They've controlled the initial Carapaz move. They nicely controlled the first climb and let a break go that is not dangerous. So perfect play by Quickstep initially. And Groupama's bridging with two riders. Now, they weren't happy with that, eh? They pulled Admirai back. And I was kind of like, that's a bit...
Poor Admirai. I mean, he signed through 2024. He did the right thing. Because I'm not sure, like Reichenbach and Pinot were stuck at 50 seconds, like probably two of the most unaerodynamic guys in the peloton in this valley. And like, I don't know what would have happened. It would have been a Shasta-Tat stuck in the middle. So they called Amarel back, went back, brought them back to the front of the peloton. Happy news for Jay Vine, right? He's got, this is what's perfect. And we discussed, you mentioned it to me, Benji, because Quickstep start pacing, I think, for Remco's stage win more than Landa keeping him out of the red jersey, frankly, because like TT's coming, don't need to worry about that. But I thought surely these guys know who Vine is after Pico Hanna. I thought like surely FDJ are not just going to put Reichenbach and Amirel on the front to be a domestique for Vine. Surely Landa, Lutsenko, no. If they go to Fan Quai with him, there's going to be trouble. But you said ego. Ego, salaries, history, all plays a big part.
Yeah, I think so as well. Because what I thought was, who's in this breakaway? A Pinot, a Landa. These riders have had the highs before. Marc Soler won a stage last week. They're going to have the confidence in themselves. They have to have the confidence in themselves to be able to fight anyone at this point. And Vine being in this breakaway probably doesn't fear them as much as it would a rider like Tarame, for example, who is not necessarily the best climber, but some of his victories in the past have been from anticipating climbs. He was the better climber, I think, in the Vuelta last year on that first week stage. Don't know which one it was. But anyway, he won a stage, if I recall correctly. But in general, he's not the climber that on paper a Landa would be at his peak, that the likes of a Soler is at his peak. But hey, we'd see at the end of the stage is that if that's still true in this stage, perhaps. But that's an aspect to why these riders would probably not be playing tree climbs from the finish to try and outplay Vine. They would try and use their strengths all on the final climb is what I thought. And I think another factor was also Quickstep, you know, like, if they are keeping the gap at 4 or 5 minutes, they're not giving enough of a gap that they can start playing. If the gap is 14 minutes, then they can't start playing in the breakaway. At 4 or 5 minutes, yeah, they gotta keep it going. And Groupama was a big factor in that, kept that going. And like when this break was initially formed, with the strength we've seen from Jay Vine on that previous mountain stage, I had zero doubts that he was the strongest in this breakaway. And that's a danger here. When you're Groupama, you've got multiple riders in there next to Pinot, and you want to make sure that Pinot can get as far as possible, so you let Reichenbach and Admirai work all day, but you're basically putting EJ in FDJ because you're bringing Jay Vine to the final climb in this way.
Maybe they thought he was Michael Soar, Australian who won a Vuelta stage. They thought it's Michael. I don't know. He's not. He's not at this race tour, I don't think. Anyway, when Vine was in there, I went on Zwift at this point because, like, the Quickstep Cavagna, he's going to hold the gap stable. you just know if they get to the final climb what's going to happen. And we have mentioned Vine a fair bit, but every year there are only two Zwift Academy winners, but there are thousands of participants. Zwift Academy helps you find your strength and go further, whether you're aiming for a pro contract or just trying to get fitter on the bike. Orientation rides are live now, and we'll talk you through the basics of Zwift Academy on a short, mellow spin with a couple of intervals alongside other Zwifters. Once Zwift Academy kicks off, the workouts will be available on demand and as group workouts, and all workouts are available in English, German, French, Spanish, and Japanese. To find out more or to start your free 7-day trial, head to Zwift.com. So we'll zoom through. Vine takes KOM at all the medium mountain points. He's uncontested there. Pedersen in absolutely insane shape, sitting on the back of this, like, Luchenko, Tarame, Landa, Pino, Vine, like, crazy breakaway, sitting with these guys in a mountainous stage. He gets the intermediate sprint there, you know, and then sort of sits up before the climb. Quickstepper pacing all day. Cavagnard goes long, then Seri. Then it's Alaphilippe starts to work, and then we're getting into the final climb. And because Quickstep have pegged it at 4 minutes, it did drift out on the climbs. That's the problem for them. Is I do think they made one small mistake today, and maybe I didn't watch the climbs closely enough, but they should swap Masnada and Cavagna on the climb and have Cavagna sit in the draft on those medium mountain climbs just to knock his watts down by 7%. And so he can be a little bit fresher for the valley. And then Masnada should be strong enough to pull hard on that. That's the one little adjustment I would have made. I might have done that. I wasn't watching every second, but that's something to think about. Anyway, get to the final climb. No one's been able to finesse. I do think they could have a little bit. FDJ played a little bit of games with sending one ahead, like Israel did in the TDF when they had multiple guys. But they didn't. Not even at the base. It's at 320 because they've been pushing so hard. Jalafilippe has been pushing for Quickstep behind. Ineos go hard into the base. I think that was obviously just a safety thing with Ben Turner. They push hard and they stop and Quickstep take it up again. But the gap's not really moving that much because the group's still working on the climb, Benji. I thought that gap was enough to play a little bit of games before that steep section because there's a steep kilometer with 6Ks to go. I was surprised Pino didn't get Reichen back to try something.
Yeah, I thought so as well. And like you said, the gap was not going down, but I visually thought that the peloton was going faster in the breakaway. And I still don't trust whether the gap before the fallout that we'll discuss pretty soon, the gap before that fallout, I don't have full confidence in that gap. I don't know why. Visually, it just didn't make sense to me. And the teams, like, a quick step, I think Alaphilippe was pacing from 8.3 to 6.5-ish kilometers to go on this climb. Like, Alaphilippe, he's not a dog shit climber, let's be honest about it. And he was visually climbing faster than what I saw in the breakaway personally. And then it started working out in the breakaway because in the peloton, they kept on pacing. And we didn't see them for quite a bit. And then we saw the breakaway for a bit, finally, because we missed the breakaway for a few minutes there for
so
a second.
So long, 5 minutes.
Yeah, I feel the same. But in the breakaway, it seemed like...
Did Vine look bad to you?
He didn't look bad to me, but he was sitting at the back all the time. And I didn't have an issue with that. I don't mean as in he didn't take over. That's not the case here. I feel like he was like looking at the situation in the group and not necessarily going hard from the bottom, as in what you could expect from a rider that is super confident in his climbing when it comes to that. So do you think he just had the confidence that he could finish off later? Or do you think that he didn't have the confidence enough so that he was playing it more tactically still?
I think he was comfortable with the gap. He lost 10 seconds to Remco in about 8 kilometers on Pico Hano. That was from the GC group, though. He's been in the breakaway here. He has that steep kilometer where he can probably get people straight off the wheel with 5.5 Ks to go. The gap is still over 2 minutes. Alaphilippe has taken it from 3 to 2 just about. There are abouts. He's done a really good pull. But after he pulls off, the Vika's pull doesn't look as strong as Alaphilippe's pull, to me at least. He's not putting in the same time. I think Vine was also, could have been unintentional, playing into the, you know, Pino and Lando, not, I think Lando got dropped pretty early, but Pino's in the break with him, Luchenko, Taramaya in the break with him. They see him hanging at the back and they're like, oh, you're not actually that good. Like, he's not showing his hand at that point. And then Solera paced it sort of Almeida style. They get to the steep section, he goes to the front, he slaps it. Pino holds onto his wheel for a little bit, cuts away, cuts back. Pino's 20 meters off his wheel and he goes clear, and suddenly he's got he builds out a 35 second gap on the rest of the breakaway. Lander's gone, Pino's gone, Luchenko's gone, Taramei and Solera pacing steadily. Vine looks to be looking his power head unit, not power meter, just keeping his power steady. There's a chicane section, like really narrow, past a farmhouse, wet, like crazy. Yeah. Thank God Quickstep thinned the peloton out before them. goes back to the peloton. They're on 150. They're not catching Vine at this point. Quickstep couldn't pace hard enough. And then camera goes. We have no idea what's going on. We know Van Wild has been pacing. We know people have been dropping like Koos early. But other than that, we're relying on race radio.
Exactly. And it was like that for a bit. I was like, okay, damn it. We're not going to see anything of this final. I was already getting the worst case scenario in my head. This is going to be like the stage we had in the Giro last, Cortina d'Ampezzo with Bernal, where we're just going to see someone cross the finish line, put their jacket up and be like, hey, I won, guys. And who knows, it might not have been Vine. You never know. But it looked like Vine was pretty safe before the fallout happened. But when we cut back, Vine was still ahead. Same situation. I felt like Soler had made moves while
I was worried.
Soler came back quite a bit.
He's on like 25 seconds with 2Ks to go.
Crazy, crazy comeback. And it's similar with what Soler did on the stage he won, where he dropped first and then he passed everybody. It's like he has this like second wind that people need to think of from now on. And in the peloton group, we were on a steeper section, but we were not necessarily with a large group anymore. I think Van Wilder was the one pacing for Evenepoel at that point with a group of like 5 to 6 riders.
I think it was just Remco when it cut back. I think it was just
I think Van Wilder was still there. Okay. I remember a shot of Van Wilder pacing at the front after the fallout.
Okay.
Perhaps I just got it wrong in my head, but what I saw, the most important factor, is that Rodriguez seemed to be one of the stronger riders at Ineos here. What?
Selfish. No, I'm kidding. he's got to stay with the group. He should have waited for Sivakov and Gagan. No, great performance from Rodriguez. Like, Remco goes solo. He's just going to set his own pace. I don't know the wind conditions. Small group of Remco. Roglic looking good. He's there with Mas and Rodriguez. No one else takes a single pull. Remco's just going to pull the entirety of this climb. And there's really nothing actually exciting happened in the GC group. It was Quickstep pace.
We didn't see it.
Well, it was just steady pace from Remco and people gradually dropping or not dropping. Like, the only excitement I saw was Ayuso goes clear. Almeida did his, like, he's trying to, Lagunas Denier, he dropped so early and then was coming back. Which I think actually costs him. I really don't think what he's doing is optimal. I know it looks like he's finishing strong and he's passing riders on an irregular climb where draft is important. I really don't think what he's doing is optimal in terms of pacing, especially as he is able to finish so strong. But he's got Ayuso ahead. They are not working together at all. Almeida, we didn't see the whole shot, but he goes past Ayuso. It looked to me like he changed pace. And he attacked Ayuso. Now, it might be just fabricating drama, but I need to look at it again. But it looks like there was a change of pace there. And that's and Ayuso slots onto his wheel. Remco goes to the finish. Enric Mas attacks because he got criticized for not attacking the other day. And that costs him a second as Remco comes around him and Roglic can't respond. Roglic looking pretty good, but still probably not his peak level. But up ahead, Jay Vine wins another stage. Probably, what did he drop in that breakaway in salary? 8 million euros, 7 million euros of salary he dropped in that breakaway today. And he just, obliterated them again. Soler, I think, is really, really good on 5, 6%. It got steep in the last 2Ks. He sort of collapsed again. So Vine wins. I mean, the Zwift read, it says we've been speaking about Jay Vine a lot, but like, how can you not? Now from the breakaway, 43 seconds ahead of Soler. Taramay nearly came and nabbed second from Soler in third. Pino in fourth. I don't really know what yeah, much better they could have done, particularly Tarame. Evenepoel leads across, credited with the same time as Marcin Roglic. Rodriguez cracks a that's not cracking, but he definitely the acceleration on the final pinch. He lost a lot of time very, very quickly. He finishes actually behind Simon Yates, 13 seconds behind Evenepoel, Marcin Roglic. Gegenhardt loses 27 seconds. He gave a bit of a curious interview afterwards. Almeida and Ayuso cross the line with O'Connor in, let me do quick maths, 50 seconds back. Carthy on 56 with Hindley. Arensman on about a minute four. Iguita Lopez not looking good. Not looking good, bruv. Maida no good. Sivakov, I think of the guys I thought capable of a top five, was the had the worst day. Sivakov didn't have a good day. He finished on 3:24, which is two. He lost 2 minutes today, so completely cracked.
Rodriguez,
I'm afraid it is. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what can I say? Rodriguez is well. To be honest, Gegenhardt also did pretty well today. So I guess it's not completely gone when it comes to leadership yet. Rodriguez is not completely solely on the throne, but it's only a matter of time. When it comes to time trial, who do you think is better, Gegenhardt or like Carlos Rodriguez on the time trial? Who's going to get clear and...
Gegenhardt, I think. Come on. Gegenhardt, I think, is better in the TT.
Not okay with it. Anyway, when it comes to like the GC overall here, when it comes to Ineos, it becomes clear that a Gegenhardt and a Carlos Rodriguez perform better than the other riders in that team, you know? When it comes to UAE, we finish in a situation where Ayuso and Almeida are in the same group because Almeida came back to that group and Ayuso just stuck on his will until the finish line. And that's how they finished. It kind of looks like when you look at solely the results that Almeida just paced Ayuso to the finishing line. But no clear indication there who's going to end up being the leader. And I don't know, is that costing them at the moment in the race? I don't know, but yeah. What do you think when it comes to the differences between Remco and Roglic on the earlier Picojano climb compared to this climb? Does that mean that you have less confidence in Remco after today? Or do you think it's fine?
I'll need to have a look at the watts of what everyone did. draft is still very important. Perhaps Remco's surge wasn't as heavy. It wasn't as rainy today. Apparently it was quite humid and warm despite the fog and overcast conditions. But certainly, like, it's certainly a dominant display from Evenepoel still. Like, he's gone to the front pace, dropped everyone else. They're just hanging on to it. Like, if Roglic thought he could even try and attack, he would. Like, these guys are fully on the limit in the wheel. Otherwise, they would attack to gain back some time, and they can't. So he's clearly superior today once again, even though he doesn't take huge time on Roglic. GC now, he still has 28 seconds and 101 on Roglic and Mas. Mas and Roglic. There's no time gain there. Rodriguez moves from 8th to 4th on 147. Gegenhardt moves up to 5th on 154. Ayuso is 8 seconds behind him on 202. Yates is kind of lurking, Benji. If he has a good week too, he could really take some scalps. Like he's just lurking there, doing his own Yates sort of thing. And then Almeida's in 8th on 244. So Ayuso does have 42 on him. Hindley, not a great day, but still in touch, 251. O'Connor, 259. Aronson, 318. Sivakov goes 6th to 12th. On 3:31, Vine moves to 6:33. I do wonder, will he be let back in a break, or what will he do in the future? But in terms of Ineos, Benji, I kind of think, looking at the Hague thing last year, like Sivakov reminds me of Hague last year. Like, they're not torching anyone on a climb. They're a similar weight, similar profile. Not a great TT, kind of consistent, although it was bad today from Sivakov. I still think you want to keep him there that's the only way they can try something on a stage 20s with multiple guys.
I know it depends on what their goal is. Is their goal to do similar as the Tour and aim for the podium? Then they can stick with the strategy that they currently have and hope that an Hendrik Maas or a Roglic or an Evenepoel fall through in one of the coming stages. And what will happen on Sierra Nevada, for example, with their leaders versus the opposing leaders? Like, I think a good discussion for us to have on the rest day is surrounding the altitude potential of each rider and seeing whether that will be the defining factor. For example, for I think Moss had trouble with some altitude back in the past. He's now sitting in second. Remco is unknown when it comes to his altitude. Roglic is great at altitude. Rodriguez, I think, is relatively unknown at altitude, pretty sure. Gegenhardt was great at altitude in that Giro. So defining all of this and kind of figuring out if that will have an influence on the Sierra Nevada stage and whether we also, because we are always thinking and keeping the time trial in mind, but should we also keep Sierra Nevada in mind as much as the time trial?
Yeah, I think so. Like, these guys are making pretty big differences on climbs that before the race I thought they wouldn't. Today was sort of expected, except for Sivakov. Like, guys being, you know, Yates on 13 seconds to the group of three on the same time. That's kind of what I expected today. Pico Hanna is completely Hanno. I thought they'd all be a 15-man group sprint on that stage, and the weather changed that. So with the guys making big differences on easier climbs, you'd think Sierra Nevada, they will make big, big differences. Hindley, yeah, he should exactly be good for that. Lopez, but who knows? I think Padun is going to look really good at Sierra Nevada, actually. I think he's going to move up a lot on GC there. But I don't know. I think nothing's decided yet. Evenepoel did not land a knockout blow today, but he's still looking very, very good. And Ineos, I think, had a good day because they have two riders who are now in the top five. And yeah, but they can't really do anything to the other guys. What about Roglic, Benji? I'll talk about Vine in a second. Like, will Roglic's condition improve? Will he, like, what should he do? I think at the moment, just hanging on is the play and wait till Sierra Nevada, where he could be way better than Remco. We don't know.
I think so as well. It's a matter of time before we get to stages that he might perhaps perform better at. He had his injury. He's had a current status of like level in this week, and I feel like it's following until he feels like he's better than them and can drop them. As simple as that. The time trial will also be an indication of how he is compared to Evenepoel in that. And when it comes to Sierra Nevada, on paper he's more proven on altitude than other riders, stuff like that. So when it comes to Roglic, just play the patient game. Make sure you keep yourself the position that you are, nothing too crazy. He doesn't have the team to play tactics in this race anyway. Let's be honest about it. GC Gus, it's dead. It's completely dead. It's on the floor.
Shut your mouth.
They trampled it twice and legs are broken, arms are falling apart, and nope. GC Gus is no more today.
You're top 10 GC.
Okay.
He's on 650. You know who will? He's on 650. Sierra Nevada, he will fly top 5 altitude climber in the world.
You know who will top 10 GC if he keeps on doing what he's doing? Jay Vine, let's talk about him.
He's on about 6.5 minutes now. He's won from the GC group, Jay Vine, on Pico Hanna. He won from the breakaway today. Different requirements from the two of them. A higher watts per kilo, crazy performance on Pico Hanna with maybe an easier day in the wheels relative to competitors. Today, from the breakaway, he initiates that initial, like the break that eventually formed with Soler, starting from almost kilometer zero, taking all the KOM sprints along the way, not that he was really contested, and then just dusts everyone in the breakaway group on the climb. And people are saying he's the best climber in the race. I'm not sure I agree. Like, Evenepoel, it's hard to split them. Like, Evenepoel only put 10 seconds into him from the GC group on Pico Hanno. We've only seen them on kind of shallowish climbs. We'll see tomorrow on Preres how Vine will go on a Rampas. I haven't got much, don't really know how he'll go on a Rampas. But I don't know. It's between him and Evenepoel right now. I think it's obviously, I'm a Vine stan, like personal friends with him. So like, but it is easier to look good against the break than when you're Remco against the GC guys, not, you know, today. So I think the narrow edge is Remco still. I'm almost more confident that Vine will carry this shape throughout the race.
Okay. Well, because on paper he has he finished last year's Vuelta?
Yes,
I think he did, right?
Pretty sure he did, yeah.
Okay, so he's got a full Grand Tour in his legs, which Remco on paper doesn't, but again, it was that Giro, so it's not really defining. I think we need to look at multiple things, and Remco Evenepoel needs to be at his top shape every single day to make sure he doesn't lose time and can't take a break at any point exactly. in his Grand Tour. Jay Vine has used some stages. I can't pinpoint every single one right now, but he's lost time. The early Basque ones, okay. He's lost some time on those early Basque ones to make sure that he could go in a breakaway. I think he tried on that Picojano stage to go in the breakaway, failed to do so, and ended up doing it from the GC group afterwards. So he lost time to go in the breakaway, which means that he spent less energy on those early Basque stages than an Evenepoel had to do, for example. He doesn't need to be watching every single move of every GC competitor to make sure he reacts to everything on the final climb. He can just look at himself a bit more. And I think that extra percentage there is already something. I don't know if it's significant. I'm not going to pretend that this is the difference between, I don't know, X amount of watts and 50 watts more, for example. I don't think that's a difference we see here. But it's at least a tiny bit difference, in my opinion. And when we look at winning today, for example, let's be honest about it. If Tarame was in the GC group, Jay Vine gained 43 seconds on Tarame on the final climb. If Tarame was in the GC group, he's on minutes of Evenepoel. Is that an indicator in your eyes?
No, because like Vine, of course, will do less watts after having been in the break all day pulling, whereas Evenepoel's been in the wheels. So that's the kind of trade-off where if you do, I think there's provisional. Like apparently the watts they did today is pretty good, not confirmed yet, but like not as good as Picojano, but Remco did like 6.4 region for 27 and a half minutes again, which is like pretty damn good. I don't know. It's tough to say. I do think the reason this is such a tricky argument is because these two are both on like an unbelievable level. And this is why when you really think about it, it was almost insanity to work with Vine in the break today. It's like, no one wants to say it because it sounds ridiculous, but Vine right now is a better climber than like, or at Pogacar's level in the Tour de France. Like, I know, of course, Pogacar has the complete package. I'm not talking about that, the TT, whatever. I'm talking about just literal watts per kilo on a mountaintop finish if they both arrive at the base based on their career. And if Pogacar's in that break, Benji, at top level after winning a stage, like, do you think they play it differently?
Yes, because he's got a different palmarès. And I think when it comes to Vine, that palmarès is still limited and the time that the competition knows him is still limited. So they might still see those victories, like the previous one on Picojano, as potentially a fluke in their eyes, for example, compared to their bigger palmarès of a Landa and a Pinot, who have won multiple things and think, okay, I can take this guy on. I think that argument is still there.
Like, yeah, I agree with you, but it seems crazy to me. Like, you see the watts, like, and to me, it requires a bigger leap of faith to think he's put a minute 30 into Roglic from the GC group and he's not done good watts. It's like, I actually think it's more likely if he puts a minute 30 on a 30-minute 6% climb, he's done pretty good watts. So I don't know. I think they're both, Evenepoel and Vine, like top five climbers in the world right now. That doesn't mean throughout the year they will be. Pogacar turns up at his target World Tour stage races at a consistent level. But yeah, right now Vine is just looking at a crazy, crazy level. What would you do if you were him, Benji? You got KOM, few points for the rest of this world to two stages in the pocket. You're now marked. It's now obvious what you can do. What would you do? You could almost switch to GC now and then try and grind out a top six on GC.
I don't know about it. It's a very difficult trade-off, you know? When it comes to the situation that he's currently in, we are eight stages in, he's got two stage wins, and if he gets into breakaways that make it to the finish line with a minute and a half roughly on the peloton at the foot of the final climb, he's got a chance of winning that stage every single time. So he has to choose. Either he goes for a top 10 in GC from this position, which I believe in. His time trial on paper with the watts that he puts out should be good.
No, it won't. I don't know. It won't be?
No,
his setup. Nah, you saw Etoile du Passage, you did great watts, but he lost so much time. His setup's no good.
Okay.
But it doesn't matter. Like top 10 GC in the Vuelta, we're talking like 25 minutes. So it's, yeah.
But what? Would you not rather try and get four stage wins than top 10 in the Vuelta?
But I'm saying, won't it be hard? Like, Stora got two, and he got the Balcon de Alicante one because Kooshagen and Sivakov were fighting each other, and then Sivakov and Stora abusing each other. The GC guys fought. Like, I'm not sure people will work with him now. Like, what I would actually do, seriously, would be to go up to Evenepoel and be like, you know what you're missing, buddy? You're missing that last man to do that last pull to reduce the group. I'm not a threat for overall GC, and just go full Contador mode, Contador Scarponi or whoever, and pace super hard. Evenepoel doesn't contest the stage and gets a nice steady pace set for him that he likes, like on Peñas Blancas. Like those two on Peñas Blancas can ride everyone away almost.
Yeah, but is Jay Vine at the point where he has the self-confidence, and I think this is a big thing, that he has a self-confidence that he says to himself, I can drop everybody except for Remco Evenepoel on this climb.
Yeah.
I don't believe that Jay Vine is at that level when it comes to self-confidence. I don't believe he believes that he's at that level. He crossed the line today, shaking his head, not believing the situation, looking at the floor. Whether that's staged or not, I don't know. I don't think so. He seems like a pretty fair guy. So I don't believe that he's at the point.
I just think he couldn't believe he won another stage after, like, these things come in bursts, like the Almeida Polonia stage, like, and then he won another one. Yeah, he's been trying to win a pro race for ages, and then he suddenly wins two in the space of 3 days. I think it's just disbelief at that. I do think he thinks, like, he knows, like, he's got good watts. Like, Pico Hannah says that. So I don't know. I don't know. It'd be interesting because Sierra Nevada will be GC group, and I think Padun will be trying to do what Vine did on Pico Hano and attacking from the group, and like he did on La Plan. Maybe Vine will go with Padun there. I think it depends on the stage. Like, it's too hard to get in the break, then you try and win from the GC group. But yeah, it's not over his stage hunting, but I think it's going to be more difficult for him now from the break.
One more aspect to it. What is he on GC now? I just want to recap that for a second. 24.16 minutes 33. I think that is still not close enough for Evenepoel to actively not allow him to go in the breakaway. I think he's still at the point where he's going to be allowed in the breakaway at least one more time at this gap personally. And yes, the breakaway dynamics might not be in his favor, but I still am not 100% confident that he's going to be seen as the factor like that in that breakaway.
They will. They will.
Is he just not strong enough at this point to play with them then? Like, let's take a look at Wadham Barguil. What was it? 2017 Wadham Barguil. He was in the breakaway multiple times in the Tour de France. He was by far the strongest breakaway rider in that Tour de France. Ended up getting second on Chambéry stage, winning two stages in week three, getting fifth on two mountain stages. Ending with GC riders, I think finishing with Chris Froome, Romain Bardet, and so forth in stages as well. Like, he was climbing into the top 10 because of this opportunity, or do you think that is because he started that movement in the second half of the tour that he didn't have the issue one weekend, a few days in, that he had to think GC or stages? He started in the second half of that tour and therefore came to that point much later in the last week and was like, I can take one more stage in top 10 like that, and didn't have to think about that. I think it's more like that.
I'm more worried about people refusing to work with him. And like, it's a good opportunity to like it, or an excuse to preview tomorrow's stage, finishing the famous climb to Prairies. Simon Yates won on this in 2018 when he won the Vuelta overall. And it's a 3.8 kilometer, 13% proper rampass, disgusting finish, 15 minute pure watts per kilo effort. There's four medium mountain climbs beforehand of 8Ks 5.7, 10Ks 5.5, 6.7, 5.2, 9Ks 4.1%. It looks like another good stage for Pedersen to go on the break. The intermediate sprint is after the third climb so he should be able to make that in the breakaway. It starts with the 5K 3.5% climb. And this is the great discussion, Benji. Breakaway will largely be similar names, one would think, like Soler, Vine, Lutsenko, Landa, maybe, I'm not sure if Maeda has lost enough time, Padun even. But will they, first of all, will they attack Vine? Second of all, do you think it's a good idea for Remco to marshal the troops for a stage? Because I think he wanted the stage win today, to do that tomorrow, ride them all day tomorrow again, given we've still got 2.5 weeks left.
It's before a rest day, but I'd argue he plays it. With a finish like this, it's difficult, you know, because we've had moments in the past where Remco on the steepest sections was not very ideal. As far as it's like, it's the Rampa in Humana time. It's the moment that the steep boys have been waiting for. And Remco is on paper not a steep boy, but he has performed on steep sections decently in the last period, I'd argue. But it's still going to be a climb where I'm like, I'm not 100% sure what to expect here. On paper, Roglic is better on that climb. And it being 3.8 kilometers makes it that if it goes to GC, Roglic is the winner for me. Like, it's too short for me, for Remco, to do the damage to Roglic. I could be wrong in that.
Evenepoel will torch Roglic tomorrow on that. He will torch him.
Okay.
Mas,
when it comes to the...
Might drop Roglic, actually. I think Mas looks good.
Possibly. When it comes to the breakaway, though, the issue with me with the stage is you've got that descent, like, after 60K for, like, 27 kilometers where it's, like, a descent section. And when it comes to gaps from the breakaway to the peloton, that's the kind of moment where you can kind of expect the gap to stay relatively similar, I'd argue, unless the peloton says we're going to take a piss here and we're going to let the gap go out to like 9 minutes. You're likely going to have a situation where the gap stays relatively the same there going into the Coladena climb. And if we got the initial part there, that Sotillo de Sabero first climby section in the first 7.5 kilometers of the stage, is that long enough for there to be climbers going in the breakaway? I don't know. I would argue that I'd see...
Tug buddy time.
Is this not the stage where Movistar tries something?
I think he looks good. And I think the steeper the better. He's really light, skinny guy. I think Movistar should try and put time into... Because Roglic is ahead of Enric Mas right now. And Sierra Nevada, with the TT in mind. And Sierra Nevada is Roglic territory over Mas, who struggled on... Portet and in the whole Tour de France this year, but particularly Granon stage. And so, yeah, I would try, if I was Movistar tomorrow, to make the stage overall quite difficult. I don't know the weather conditions. I think it's, you do want a tug buddy at the start. I think Thibaut Pinot will be trying to get in the breakaway again. And yeah, I think Buitrago, Thibaut Pinot, this is very similar to the Mol stage in the Tour de France, which is won by Matthews ahead of Bettiol. Woods, I think we all like both liked before the Tour of Vuelta, but he's out, unfortunately. Valverde in years past would have won, but unfortunately he doesn't have that shape. So tomorrow I'm going with Jay Vine from the break again, actually, to win the stage.
Bruh.
Easily.
Jesus, every single stage. I'm going Marc Padun again. Same pick as yesterday. He didn't go in the break today. He tried and eventually got called back. And the second break, he tried getting in and wasn't the one that actually got the stage. So I guess that's the bummer there. But I don't know. Will Marc Padun go in the break on a stage like this, which is not a big mountain? It's a smaller climb of 3.8 kilometers. That's the portion where I'm like, did I select the right rider for this? And that makes me go into like the rankings of today's stage and see where the likes of a Buitrago finished, for example, who we did not see today, was on 646, 624, I mean. That's the kind of rider who can also be in the breakaway. So I don't know. Lutsenko's also the type for it. I'm going to go for... Damn it, Buitrago. I'm going to switch. Not Potun, Buitrago. And it's going to be Potun, isn't it?
Nah, I kind of agree with your logic backing out of him. I think David de la Cruz on Astana did a nice performance-ish today. Look to see him getting a break. Luis Leon Sanchez for Bahrain looks okay. Champusin will probably try and get in the break as well. Carapaz, maybe. He's lost so much time on GC. Maybe Kuss. Maybe Benji, this is the Balcon Alicante stage, like last year, which was the day before the first rest day, where Kuss, Sivakov, Haig got in that break to take time back. Verona. I'd love to see Verona in the break tomorrow. I think it will be a big breakaway. More people have lost a lot of time on GC. Ooh. Haters, because he's Matthews, right? And he goes with 50Ks on the medium mountain. Now we're talking. That's Hayter and Plapp in the breakaway. In the medium mountains, they work the others over. That's how to beat someone like Vine or the better climbers. That's a really good call. Ineos should go with that. Hayter, and he'll be happier in the break than the bunch, right? Him and Plapp. Yeah. So I think that's – and at 5K, 3% to start, whew, they can really motor on that sort of gradient. That's the one. They attack.
No, it's not the one. Vincenzo Nibali. I'm switching again. It's Vincenzo Nibali.
Nibali. Fuck.
It's the day. The day he goes in the breakaway. I can feel it.
Nah, anyway, Vine's going to win pretty comfortably, I think, again. And I think Remco takes more time on GC and rides everyone off the wheel tomorrow. So lots to look forward to. I had a good Zwift session today. Pretty enjoyable watching the stage and Zwifting whilst it's raining heavily here. I'll give you a moment in the sun, Benji. Rodriguez, are you doing it? You're crowning Rodriguez over? Are you so already? You gonna do that?
Yeah. I will. Top three, it's coming. Announce it beforehand. Had full confidence in the preview. I should still remember it. Full confidence in Rodriguez for this parkour. Podium's happening. It's coming. Best rider on Ineos today. Gegenhardt, gonna become a domestique in no time. So Carlos Rodriguez, it's coming home. It's a podium for him at the end of the Vuelta.
You know that Ayuso, I think, would he have been a first year under 23 at L'Avenir? he should have been at L'Avenir today. He's 19. He's 2 years younger than Rodriguez.
Second
crazy.
Year, I think.
Is he second?
He crashed out last year.
I don't know how you 23
when he
works.
Was supposed to win L'Avenir.
Anyway, Sean Utrecht-Brooks, I can't say his goddamn name. He looks like, Tour of Norway, aging better, even better this week. He's been torching everybody at L'Avenir. We'll do a little recap potty or some segment on that, maybe on the rest day on Monday. Rodriguez looking really good. Ayuso looking good. Hopefully him and Almeida find a way to work together. Maybe they don't need to at this point. They just do their own pace. But that's all from us. And we'll see you with the recap of Pérez for the rest day on Monday tomorrow. Ciao.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.